Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nainar Tree's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Road to Wigan Pier is George Orwell's 1937 nonfiction work, combining social reportage with political argument. Written after Orwell traveled through the industrial north of England in the mid-1930s, the book examines unemployment, housing, mining, and the everyday conditions of working-class life in Lancashire and Yorkshire during the Depression. The first half is a hard-edged account of what Orwell saw on the ground: poor lodgings, harsh labor, cramped domestic spaces, and the physical realities of coal mining. The second half shifts into essay form, as Orwell reflects on his own middle-class background and the problems facing socialism as a political movement. The book is both a record of poverty and an inquiry into why a system that might address that poverty often fails to attract broad support. Its value lies in that combination of first-hand observation, moral judgment, and political self-scrutiny. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, first-hand reporting from the industrial north of England. A defining feature of the book is Orwell's decision to treat social investigation as lived experience rather than distant observation. He traveled through depressed industrial areas and tried to understand working-class life from the inside, including the conditions of miners and unemployed families. This method gives the book its authority. The argument is grounded in physical details such as overcrowded housing, poor food, exhausting labor, and the atmosphere of declining industrial towns. Orwell does not present poverty as an abstraction or a statistic. He shows how it affects the body, the home, and the rhythm of daily life. That approach matters because it turns social criticism into evidence-based description. The book's impact comes partly from this refusal to soften reality, making it one of the clearest literary records of Depression-era Britain. Secondly, coal mining as a model of industrial hardship. The mining sections are central because they embody the extreme conditions Orwell wanted readers to confront. He descends into the pits and describes the work as physically punishing, dangerous, and dehumanizing. Mining is not used merely as local color. It becomes a symbol of the industrial system's costs, where basic necessities are purchased through injury, exhaustion, and constant discomfort. Orwell pays attention to the everyday logistics of the miner's life as well, including housing, meals, and the sheer effort required to maintain a family on low wages. This matters analytically because it links labor to social structure. The reader sees that hardship is not accidental, but built into the economic order. By focusing on mining, Orwell gives a concrete human shape to class inequality and shows why industrial poverty cannot be understood through moral judgment alone. Thirdly, socialism tested against ordinary public opinion. The second half of the book is less a program than a diagnosis of why socialism struggles to win support. Orwell argues that the movement may offer a practical remedy to the conditions he observed, yet still repel many people who might benefit from it. He is interested in political psychology. Habits, tastes, prejudices, and emotional reactions shape how people respond to ideas. This is what makes the book unusual among political texts. Orwell does not simply advocate socialism as a righteous position. Orwell turns inward to explain how his own middle-class upbringing shaped his political thinking and his relationship to socialism. This autobiographical reflection is not self-indulgent. It is part of the book's central argument. He suggests that socialists often carry cultural habits that make them unattractive or unconvincing to working people, especially when they speak in ways that seem moralizing, eccentric, or detached from ordinary life. By examining his own background, Orwell identifies class not only as an economic condition, but also as a set of manners, assumptions, and tastes. It depends on whether a movement can speak plainly, honestly, and without condescension. Orwell's self-critique is one reason the book has enduring force. It scrutinizes the observer as carefully as the society being observed. Lastly, a lasting critique of poverty, ideology, and political language, The Road to Wigan Pier endures because it does more than document misery. It asks how language, ideology, and class perception shape public life. Orwell is sharply aware that political causes can fail when they become rhetorical, dogmatic, or socially narrow. He writes with moral urgency, but he also resists tidy slogans, which is why the book can unsettle readers on different sides of the political spectrum. Its limitations are also part of its significance. Some readers have found its treatment of socialism uneven or too emotional, yet that tension reflects the book's larger purpose, which is to force honesty rather than produce a polished system. In that sense, it stands between journalism and political essay, using vivid description to expose injustice while also questioning the habits of reformers themselves. That combination is rare and helps explain why the book remains a key text on class and industrial society. In conclusion, The Road to Wigan Pier is best suited for readers interested in George Orwell, British social history, labor conditions, and the practical problems of political persuasion. It is especially valuable for students of nonfiction because it shows how reportage can become argument without losing observational force. Readers who want a straightforward manifesto may find it more complicated than expected, but that complexity is part of its strength. The book offers not only a record of Depression-era poverty and mining life, but also a searching critique of the assumptions that shape socialist politics and middle-class reformism. Compared with many books in the social criticism genre, it stands out for its combination of first-hand immersion, moral clarity, and self-questioning. Orwell does not write as an outside commentator handing down judgment. He examines the society he sees and the social position from which he sees it. That makes the book intellectually useful even where readers disagree with its politics, because it models rigorous observation, frank analysis, and an unwillingness to flatter either ideology or audience. It remains a distinctive work because it is both a document of hardship and a test of political honesty. If you would like to support George Orwell, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.